like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. Happy National Pig Day. That no way should be interpreted as political commentary. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Allison Eastwood, the actress, director, and animal advocate, whose Eastwood Ranch Foundation recently launched FosterForKids.com, a website that connects rescue groups and animal shelters with a nationwide network of pet fosters and transporters designed to help mitigate the problem of overcrowding at animal shelters and the often attendant high rates of euthanasia. Foster Fur Kids seeks to encourage animal lovers across the country to provide foster homes, and those prospective fosters are connected with rescue groups and shelters who in turn supply these fosters with food, beds, leashes, bowls, kitty litter, veterinary care, and more. I'll discuss FosterForKids.com's animal shelters, rescue groups, and more when I speak with Allison Eastwood in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Nash McCutcheon of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about their forthcoming Bullies and Browns event, March 6th, in which bully breeds, bully breed mixes, and brown dogs can get spay-neuter vaccinations and more for a very nominal fee. Of course, we're never allowed to discuss exact prices on the air. Right now, though, let's get to Allison and Foster Fur Kids with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Allison Eastwood to Talking Animals. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I know it's very, very early out there in California, so thank you so much for joining us at this slightly ungodly hour.
That's okay. I haven't had coffee, but I'm going to do my best.
All right, cool. Well, me too. I have had coffee, and I'm going to do my best as well. So now, with people who are animal advocates or people who start animal organizations, and of course, both descriptions apply to you, I'm often really interested in what shaped that sensibility in their formative years. What role did animals play in your family growing up?
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a really beautiful place, Pebble Beach, California, which is, the Central Coast, and we always were surrounded by, you know, nature and animals, and, you know, my parents were animal lovers. You know, we even took in orphan baby deers when we were kids and got to bottle feed them and raise them and protect them. So we always had lots of critters around. We were always, you know, sort of engulfed in nature. So I think that was obviously had a big effect on my adult life and what I'm doing now.
So besides the various critters, including the orphan baby deer that passed through, what kind of animals actually were Eastwood House residents at the time?
Well, you know, not oddly enough, but a lot of people get sort of, you know, disappointed when they hear that my dad is actually allergic to horses, you know, because he's been obviously quite famous for being a cowboy. So
yeah.
He's been allergic to animals for quite a while, specifically dogs and cats. So we didn't sort of have traditional pets. We actually had pet rats. I had birds, fish. I even had hermit crabs at one point.
Wow.
I know, they're not very exciting, but they were, you know, I just wanted to have anything I could take care of. So I think I somehow talked my mom into hermit crabs at one point. But, you know, we had a lot of different sort of untraditional critters, just because we couldn't, you know, have your usual dogs and cats and whatnot.
I like the idea of improvising to the extent where a hermit crab is part of the household animals. That's great.
Yeah, I was stretching with that one, but because, you know, they're not the most cuddly, but, you know, I had bunnies and I had lots of different critters. So,
well, plus, I like that it's, as you noted, it's kind of would be surprising, I think, to many people to learn that Clint Eastwood is allergic to horses. So, and but it sounds like actually broader than that. It sounds like it's kind of a number of animals, really, not just horses.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And I did. I grew up riding, so that was okay because, you know, we the horse stayed at the barn, so that was fine. But, yeah, that's one of those sort of, you know, Hollywood moments where they're like, oh, really?
Yeah, well, still,
the fact... really a cowboy.
Well, but at least for some of us, it's been a pretty well-kept secret, so doesn't really matter. It's just kind of an amusing tidbit now to hear, so...
Yeah.
As you moved from sort of childhood into adulthood, what impact did your professional life, modeling, acting, et cetera, have on your love, obviously, passion for animals? I mean, for many people, traveling and being on the go, it's what's part of being the modeling career or the acting career, sort of is at odds for many people, at least, with having pets. Did you find that to be your experience? Or?
Yeah, I mean, in my 20s, I did travel a lot. I lived in France for a year. And, you know, at those times, I did have cats, actually. I took my cats. I had two cats. And when I moved to France for a year to work, I took my cats with me, which was quite an adventure. And so, you know, I think you can make it work. It just really depends, you know, on kind of, you know, what you can do. And then when I settled back down in Southern California, you know, obviously I had a dog, several dogs, rescued a dog. And so, you know, I managed to always, you know, have pets. So obviously when you're traveling or you're, you know, having to, or you're not at home a lot, it's much more difficult, but,
sure.
That's why I'm talking to you today about fostering, which is important, is that if you're not able to have a permanent pet or, you know, that sort of responsibility at your, you know, at this point in your life, fostering is so rewarding and so amazingly helpful to shelter animals.
Well, we're going to delve deeply into that and foster for kids in a moment, but let's talk first, just for a bit at least, about Eastwood Ranch Foundation, starting with, was there a particular impetus behind launching the organization? Like, was there a catalyst, or was this sort of a gradual thing, like, hey, I've always loved animals, so maybe now's the time for me to do this?
Well, kind of what you just said, I obviously had been moving towards, you know, wanting to help animals and rescued some animals. But I think what really kind of shifted me into being more proactive about rescue and actually getting the sort of boots on the ground and starting a foundation was I worked on a show. I co-created and co-hosted a show for National Geographic Wild Channel. Called Animal Intervention.
Yeah.
At that point, I got to travel around the country, and I visited different shelters and veterinarians, humane societies, met with different people, and really sort of got to see what was going on. And at that point, you know, that really sort of was the catalyst for me to get much more involved and to find a way to be, you know, to make a difference every day instead of just sort of documenting it for TV.
I was going to ask you about this at some point anyways, but now that we're into it, talk a little bit more about that show, because, I mean, in addition to the things that you saw that you mentioned, I didn't see all the episodes, but I think I recall there were some encounters like with roadside zoos and some other sort of operations along those lines. So maybe you could talk about some of the various things that were featured on the show.
Yeah, well, you know, focused predominantly on wild animals, exotic animals, you know, and there are, I think there's still 8 states that allow, you know, just regular old people like you and me to have tigers and bears in their backyard. And so obviously, you know, wild animals do not make good pets. I think that's pretty much a given. And so people run into a lot of, you know, trouble and a lot of heartache. And obviously the animals don't do well either. So we, you know, I think, let's see, we had a couple of bears, we had a couple of tigers, you know, there was a lady who had a baboon up in upstate New York. So there was all kinds of animals that, you know, we tried to help these people and the animals, you know, that we were lucky enough to, you know, be able to go in and, you know, rehome these animals to sanctuaries where, you know, they at least lived in an environment that was much closer to what they should be living in instead of just somebody's dog run in a backyard, you know?
So that, for people who didn't see the show or even maybe know about it till just our conversation now, so that was the intervention part of the title, is that a lot of these animals, you mentioned the bears, tigers, baboons, others, were in people's homes or backyards or wherever, and so you guys would sort of go in and, I guess, within reason, educate those folks or otherwise persuade them that, hey, they could have a much better life and those around them could have a safer life in many cases if they did get rehomed to those sanctuaries.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we weren't always successful. Actually, we did 6 episodes, and there were 2 stories per episode. So we did 12 different, you know, pieces. And, yeah. You know, I think maybe half of the time we were successful. And the other half, that, you know, people didn't, for whatever reason, want help or give them up or didn't feel that, you know, the animal was being mistreated. But, you know, I mean, I think that for most people and for the audience or, you know, people who are, got to see it, and I think you can still find it online if you're curious to check it out, you know, a lot of people aren't aware that, you know, maybe keeping a large bear, you know, in a small dog run and feeding it Twinkies every day is just not healthy for the animal and not, you know, not right. So, you know, we had some that worked out and some that we weren't able to help. So it was a tough show to do and a tough show sometimes to watch. And that's probably why it was only around for one season, because I think that, you know, it was not easy for people to watch. There was a lot of animals in peril and people who were in bad shape. So it was hard to do, but it, you know, it led to something beautiful for me to come back to Southern California and you know, start a nonprofit and to find a way to really, you know, help animals.
Well, before we get a little further then into Eastwood Ranch Foundation, well, let me ask you this. I don't know if this was the intent or even a byproduct, but as far as the animal intervention show, again, not a whole lot of episodes, but some that I think had some significant impact. And you mentioned sort of in introducing the show that, you know, a number of states really just don't have laws preventing that kind of thing. Was there some legislation that came about, maybe not immediately, but at some point, do you think partly spurred by people seeing what goes on in those states where there isn't that kind of legislation preventing that and seeing the need maybe through some of those episodes to tighten that up and make sure that those kind of animals aren't just wandering around people's basements?
I think that, you know, there might have been some change or movement or shift in some states, but, you know, I think there's just, I mean, you know, every state sort of has their different mentality and their different ways of thinking. So, you know, I mean, for instance, Texas is, you know, it's a little bit like the Wild West when it comes to animals, and then I think there's more. I've read many times that there's actually more tigers in captivity in the state of Texas than there are, you know, left actually in the wild in the whole world. So,
yeah.
You know, and it's a big state, so you've got a lot of land, but, and I'm not sure that it'll ever change there for, you know, for instance, but, you know, it may. And I'd like to think that we shined a light on something, because I don't think wild animals make good pets. I don't think that, you know, that it should be taken lightly that people are allowed to have, you know, exotic animals that require very special treatment or, you know, special housing, whatnot. So
yeah.
I like to deter people from thinking that it's a good thing to do, but it's, you know, you still can do it quite a bit.
Yeah, sometimes it takes, unfortunately, a tragedy of pretty large scope, like what happened in Ohio with a guy turning loose all those exotic animals or something like that. And then you get people's attention and media spotlight and other things. And even then, it's slow going, but at least it seems like that can sometimes put something in motion that otherwise is just up against too many obstacles. But let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Allison Eastwood, the actress, director, director and animal advocate, whose Eastwood Ranch Foundation recently launched fosterforkids.com, a website that connects rescue groups and animal shelters with a nationwide network of pet fosters and transporters. If you'd like to ask Allison a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So, Allison, in the wake of animal intervention, it sounds like that kind of prompted you to create Eastwood Ranch Foundation. So when exactly was it founded and where is it located if it has a physical?
Yeah, well, we started in 2012 and... You know, we're here in Southern California. We don't actually have we're working on our own physical bricks and mortar ranch at this point. You know, I started it in hopes of eventually having a ranch or a sanctuary for unwanted animals, whether they be domestic or exotic or wildlife, any injured or unwanted animal. You know, no buying, no trading, no selling, none of that. Not like a zoo, but an actual, just a place for an animal to, you know, spend out the rest of its life in peace and comfort. So that's the goal. And then, you know, for us here in Southern California, we do predominantly dog and cat rescue from Hike Hill shelters. We have a fairly... We have a full shelter system here. Unfortunately, you know, we have a lot of issues with overpopulation in Southern California. So there's always a lot of animals in need here. And so we work basically with fosters and boarding facilities and our own homes. And, you know, we pull dogs and cats that, you know, are more than likely, you know, not going to make it through the day or the week out of shelters and get them, you know, vetted and socialized and temperament tested and then find them their forever home.
So that sounds pretty cool. And it sounds like without at the moment a bricks and mortar kind of facility that you're sort of like a middle stop or an interim stop. So you're getting them out of those shelters, especially if they're on the cusp of being euthanized and finding foster places or other places for them to kind of roost until they can be adopted out. But the main thing is to get them out of those shelters before anything dark happens.
Yes, for sure. So that's what we do. But then, you know, obviously we work on behalf of a lot of different animals and animal welfare. So, you know, if you know, part of our mission statement is to help other nonprofits. You know, we don't just fundraise for ourselves. We don't just do what we do, hence Foster Fur Kids, but part of Eastwood Ranch is to help other, you know, like-minded rescues doing great work.
Yeah.
Other nonprofits, you know, we work with a lot of other animal welfare nonprofits, support a lot of different nonprofits out there that are doing great work. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to be part of a community. My philosophy is that we can make a greater impact if we all band together and, you know, we share, you know, most of us share a common goal. And I think it's a lot easier to do that together instead of separately.
So is then the fosterforkids.com sort of an effort to make a more specific a step in that direction and beyond what you have been doing through Eastwood Ranch Foundation? Is this more about, hey, let's really step up our fostering efforts and broaden them out? Or what was kind of the...
Yeah, I mean, you know, my rescue partner and I, you know, she was the one that sort of came up with the idea. And she said, you know, it's really hard to find fosters and we could save some more animals. And we would I think the animals would do better, the ones that we're saving, if we could find, you know, fosters. So it kind of was born out of necessity, and you know, that's how it started. And it's, you know, it's a free website, for informational website to connect people across America. So, you know, you just can put in your zip code, and you can either find, you know, rescues near you that, you know, need help with animals to foster, or you can, you know, transport animals in your zip code or in your surrounding, you know, close by zip codes. So it's a pretty simple, straightforward way of connecting people across America who want to help or want to, you know, maybe participate in helping a shelter animal in need. And, you know, a lot of rescues take dogs and cats and different animals out of shelters, and then they put them straight into a boarding facility because that's, you know, how you sort of do it in order to keep them safe. But, you know, boarding facilities aren't really the most optimum place to take an animal that's just come out of a traumatic shelter environment. So really fostering, you know, to take open your home to an animal that's just coming out of a very stressful environment so that it can decompress and have a chance to, you know, receive some love and attention is such a you know, much more beneficial way of helping an animal than just sort of taking it from one kennel to another. So that's what the fostering is really important for. It's, you know, it's a way to really help the animal, and you get a really good sense of temperament. The foster parent, you know, can also help, you know, the new adoptive parent with any behavioral issues or personalities or quirks, anything like that. And it really personalizes the situation, really, for the animal.
And, of course, across the country, there are a lot of shelters, rescues, et cetera, have foster programs in place. So do you see fosterforkids.com as an effort to just supplement some of those? Or what is there a specific aim that it has to fill a need that maybe you guys saw that at the moment hadn't been filled until fosterforkids.com?
Well, you know, it's similar to a lot of great websites out there in the sense that it's just connecting. And, you know, like, for instance, petfinder.com is a great way to find a rescued animal for adoption. And you can, you know, you can be anywhere in the United States and look through Petfinder, and it's a great resource.
Yeah.
And it's free. So that's really sort of the model that we used. And, you know, this was a way for, you know, people all over to be able to, you know, participate, and for rescues, you know, to find potential people, because it's not easy, you know. You've got social media, and you've got, you know, maybe some, you know, different, like your radio shows or different things like that, but there isn't a lot out there that, you know, where pet lovers can go to sort of participate or see what's going on in their community. So this was really, you know, founded for that reason, is so that you could find people, like-minded people or rescues in your community to participate and help.
And how many at this point? I'm not sure. Actually, let me just ask, in fact, when did you guys launch fosterforkids.com?
Well, it's live already.
We
went live on January 1st.
Okay.
We're sort of officially launching in March,
which
we've been starting to do. I mean, the point now was that we wanted to get it up and out there, and we already have a lot of great people that have signed up, rescues and, you know, people who want to foster or transport. But we also, you know, we didn't want to do sort of an official launch yet because we want to make sure that the site is, you know, user-friendly. We wanted feedback. So if any of your listeners out there, you know, go check out the site. Sign up or just go through it. And we always would love to hear what people have to say and if they have any questions or issues so that, you know, we can sort of work things out before we go into our sort of official launch. But it is live and it is up, and we have, like I said, we've got lots of people already signed up and more signing up every day, and we're spreading the word with great people like yourself and other pet folks and rescues.
Yeah.
So it's coming along, you know, and we're really happy with it. We've already had some success stories here, especially in California.
Tell me one of those. By the way, let me first just say that even though the name kind of says what the website address is, let me just for people out there who might want to take up your invitation to check it out and maybe offer some input, the website is actually fosterforkids.com. So that's the website Allison is referring to, which you can check out now, which is up and running and live, as she says, but looking to, I guess, make some tweaks and adjustments depending on what kind of feedback you get. But what kind of success story have you already had with this?
Well, we have a great story. You know, unfortunately, we have a lot of pit bulls in our shelter system, and that's pretty much across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pit and pit mixes, and
sure.
You know, and sadly, they've been a somewhat demonized breed, and so they're not always easy to find, you know, homes for or to find fosters for, just because people are worried that, you know, they're not sure what to expect. We had a pit bull that was a very friendly, wonderful dog. And you know, this dog was going to be put to sleep at the end of the day. And, we were able to find a really sweet couple, young couple that had had dogs and experience with dogs. And they ended up signing up and becoming a foster for our rescue, Eastwood Ranch. So we pulled this dog, on the day it was, you know, set to be euthanized. It had been at the shelter for a while and no one had taken it. And, sure enough, it went straight to the fosters, and, you know, the dog is doing amazing. The dog's doing great. It's, you know, it's friendly, it's sweet, loves cats.
Nice.
They were able to, you know, they were able to work with it, and they said, you know, they might end up even keeping the dog. So
oh,
that's
great.
That's called a foster failure. By
yeah,
the
we love foster failures, though, frankly, as long as they keep fostering.
Love,
yeah. Yeah,
we do. We yeah. love foster failures, but we don't want to lose our foster.
Right. Spots, it's so. A mixed bag sometimes. But sometimes
it's
I find
bag.
That foster failure people become ongoing foster people, even if they still have the animal that they were supposedly just fostering for a bit. But
yeah.
But that's great. So let me ask you, Allison, let me actually remind people one more time. You might just be tuning in. Duncan Strauss is talking. And my guest is actress, director, and animal advocate Allison Eastwood, who recently launched fosterforkids.com, a website that connects rescue groups and animal shelters with a nationwide network of pet fosters and transporters. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So that story sounds really cool and a great happy ending in all kinds of ways. And it made me, as you were describing, it made me wonder, does fosterforkids.com sort of have a way to emphasize cases that are more urgent, like almost like sort of triaging, like, hey, this pit is going to be euthanized Thursday, so let's focus our attentions there, whereas some of these others port and we want to get to them, but there's not a ticking clock there? Is that, do you kind of like sculpt your efforts
well,
a little bit in that
actually,
direction?
Yeah, it's actually up to the rescues. It's up to the rescues that are, you know, are trying to pull the animal, really. So whatever they want to, you know, whatever they want to post about the dog, you know, is really up to them.
Okay.
This website is really about putting people together.
Okay.
We, you know, for instance, Foster for Kids does not vet the fosters. That's up to the rescue or the shelter.
I see. Okay.
You know, and like as far as any sort of payment towards a fostering, whether you volunteer for free or whether you can get, you know, some of your expenses covered, that's all up to the negotiation between the rescue. So
okay.
Once you sign up, you can then go in and see, and hopefully, you know, the rescues will have more information. And if for some reason you couldn't foster the animal, the one great thing about the website is there's a pledge button so that you could actually pledge a donation straight to that dog or that specific rescue.
That's great.
Yeah, which is helpful. But it's really just a you know, a place for people to come together and meet.
Yeah.
It's really up to the rescue and the shelter and the people in the community to, you know, work with each other when they find each other. But, you know, certainly most of the animals that are probably on there, or at least a good portion of them, you know, have probably, any animal in a shelter that's a kill shelter is, you know, is in danger.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, on the ropes.
Fostering
yeah.
saves lives.
Yeah.
You can't, if a rescue has no place to take it, no boarding, no more room in their garage, and they want to pull this animal, but they have nowhere to take it, it's just, you know, one person fostering can make it, you know, can save a life in that day.
And also, it sounds like in many cases, at least, that these rescue groups and shelters that are part of the fosterforkids.com network are indeed going to supply those foster people with with food, with beds, with kitty litter if it's a cat, with veterinary care depending on what's needed, so that these people who are saying, yeah, I can foster, I have the time, or we're not ready to adopt at the moment, but I can't really absorb a bunch of expenses. It sounds like even they would be able to participate, because in many cases, at least the key expenses would be covered.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, just personally, you know, Eastwood Ranch Foundation, when we have fosters, you know, we have one lady that fosters for us, and she does dogs and cats. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, boarding facilities, and a lot of rescues using boarding as a, you know, interim way of getting a dog out and having it somewhere to go. But that, to me, isn't always the best option. So, you know, I pay my foster a very, you know, small fee, which covers, you know, some of her time and expenses. But then I also, of course, take care of food, mm-hmm. And supplies, so that she doesn't ever have to come out of pocket. And then for transportation, she also helps with transportation. She has a big truck. She's taken, you know, lots of cats and dogs for us. So, you know, we give her 75 cents a mile. So, you know, it's covering, you know, a substantial amount of her gas and all that stuff. So it's really up to how the rescue wants to do it. And obviously, it's great when people can volunteer, or, you know, don't need to be compensated. Or it's really up to, you know, what works out for the foster and the rescue.
And also, it's great that anything like that can help cover expenses, because if you have someone who has the time and the room in their house, or the room in their heart, or both, to do it, yet might be on a fixed income or otherwise a little bit tight on dough, you'd hate to sort of have them be ready to do it but just slightly unable, whereas just mm-hmm. a few expenses reimbursed, or, you know, picking up the vet bill or whatever, could make the difference. So it's good to know.
Yeah, well, vet bills are, you know, anyone who has a pet knows how vet bills,
yeah,
you know, they can skyrocket. So that's, you know, that's another component. We always, you know, when we pull an animal you know, from a shelter, we always cover the vet bills, you know, and that's the given for us. And then depending on what the needs are, or what we feel is fair, you know, most people that are fostering obviously are doing this out of the kindness of their own heart and wanting to help and participate. So certainly not, I'm not suggesting that this is a way for people to have income or to
right.
you know, live or survive.
Right.
It's strictly so that, you know, like you said, people who may not be able to afford to do this, you know, they can give their time, but they can't give, you know, what their paycheck or whatever they're receiving. So
yeah.
It's just a way to make sure everyone's sort of covered.
For sure.
And
well,
that the animal has the best care possible.
Yeah. Just the notion of vet bill or no vet bill could make all the difference for a certain person saying, yeah, I'm happy to step up, I'm ready to step up, versus, you know what, if I had to face a vet bill that even no one anticipates right now, I just don't think I could take that on. So, yeah, that just that alone is a huge, huge element.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people don't know. You can call around to different veterinarians in your community. I mean, obviously, if you're in a rural area, it might be more difficult, but you can call around, and there's lots of vets out there. If you say, look, I'm fostering a rescue pet or a shelter pet, and, you know, you can, and you can maybe even can provide them with, you know, the shelter card or whatever information you got at the shelter, they'll give you a heavy discount.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
There are a lot of people that work with us here in Southern California, and we're so thankful, because the vet bills really are the bulk of what we spend a lot of our money on and we fundraise for. So, you know, feel free to call around and ask and say, would you be willing to, you know, maybe cut us a little bit of a deal, knowing that this is a, you know, a shelter animal in need, and
yeah.
You're doing a great thing.
We're just in our final moments here, Allison, but again, we're speaking with actress, director, and animal advocate Allison Eastwood, and we're discussing fosterfurkids.com, a website she recently launched that connects rescue groups and animal shelters with a nationwide network of pet fosters and transporters. We have just probably a minute or so or two left, but if you do want to quickly get in on the conversation, call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0800. 1-800-875-8885. So a couple of times you've mentioned transportation. So I'm just interested, how does the transportation element work? Are animals being transported to California or from California? Or again, is this more nationwide in its scope?
Well, I mean, it just varies. It depends on what the rescue or the shelter needs. But, mm-hmm. you know, for instance, you know, we're in a very sprawling area. You know, Los Angeles is a big city, big county.
Yeah.
And a lot of our really overfilled hike-hill shelters are on the outskirts of Los Angeles, out in other counties. So, you know, if you're working or you've got kids or, you know, you can't just jump in the car and go run down, you know, spend an hour and a half or 2 hours in traffic to go to a shelter to go pull an animal that might not live past the end of the day, you can sign up to transport or you can look for a transporter on the website. And somebody that hopefully is in that area would be able to go and pick up the animal and bring it to you. And again, the fees or any sort of compensation is completely up to, you know, the rescue or the shelter, or to be negotiated with a private person. But it's just a great way because a lot of people, you know, want to be able to, you know, adopt an animal or rescue an animal, but for whatever reason, if they're at work, you know, whatever, they can't get to the shelter in time. This is a way, it's kind of like a little bit of like an Uber or a Lyft for an animal where you can, you know, you can sort of pitch in to help pay someone to transport that animal to safety.
Well, you know, this brings me to a kind of interesting point. A writer that I like a lot, her name's Erin Greenwood. She was the animal welfare editor for a number of years at Huffington Post, now contributes to the Dodo and the Washington Post Animalia blog and other places, posed a very interesting question on Facebook this morning about transporting shelter animals. And I'd like to just read it and see if you'd like to comment, because it just was kind of interesting, sort of food for thought. It says, I know there's a lot of disagreement in animal welfare about whether it's good to transport shelter animals across state lines or if you focus your rescue efforts in your own community. Is it okay to bring dogs to New York, for example, from the south, and to rescue, or should you not do that until every dog at the city shelter is safe? My question is whether your views on this issue correspond with your views on free trade more generally. In other words, if you think that you should focus on your community's animals first, do you also think that free trade is a bad idea? If you're good with interstate transport, are you also in favor of free trade? So kind of an intriguing question. I don't know if you have any thoughts or comments.
I don't really have a lot of thoughts about free trade per se. I mean,
she's drawing a parallel, obviously, I think, between the notion of transporting animals from one area to another area across, especially communities or even state lines, and I guess drawing that parallel with free trade. But
well, what I do know is that we've been doing a lot of transports. There's a lot of different nonprofits now on the board of Rescue Express, and they are basically have several buses, and they transport, you know, Southern California shelter animals, you know, to Oregon, Washington State. I sent 25 Chihuahuas to British Columbia several weeks ago because they don't have any little dogs available up in British Columbia. A lot of they don't have the shelter, you know, issues we have down here, and if they do have some animals there, they predominantly have larger dogs. So a lot of people live in apartments and condos or don't, you know, want to have a big dog or maybe have a limitation for their rental. So they wanted, you know, they have waiting adopters up there. So at this point, we're just trying to send animals wherever we can where they have potential homes safe as opposed to being, you know, just sitting here in the shelters.
Right. Well, not surprised the comments, at least I saw before I had to come into the studio here on that post, were that basically what you said is like, hey, interesting point, but our goal ultimately is to find homes for those animals, especially if they're in a kill shelter somewhere where their clock is ticking, and where that means transporting several states away, so be it.
Yeah, and I mean, believe me, in Southern California, we are very thankful for the receiving rescues in Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia, even Idaho. I've sent cats to Santa Fe, New Mexico. I mean, I couldn't be more thrilled that these people have waiting adopters and are great places, because we just don't, you know, we have so many animals here, and there's not enough people to adopt these animals in Southern California. We're lucky that other places will take them, and You know, these animals have all been, a lot of them have been fostered, a lot of them, they've all been vetted, they've all received, you know, treatment and socialization, and so it's great to be able to know that, you know, they've got a home waiting for them somewhere else.
Cool. Well, Allison, I appreciate you making the time and getting up early to do so. We've been speaking with Allison Eastwood, and again, the new organization that we've been talking about to sort of connect people that are looking to foster and adopt and transport, all those things. It's fosterforkids.com. So check out the website. It sounds like they're still looking for feedback about ways to fine tune it. So, Allison, thank you again for joining us, and thanks for all your great work on behalf of all our animal friends.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on the show, and look forward to hearing people's feedback on the website.
Great. Thanks again.
Thanks.
In a few moments, I'll talk briefly with Nash McCutcheon of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about the next Bullies and Browns event coming up March 6th. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a comic we haven't played before, but a piece that seems relevant to our conversation with Allison. This is Nick Turner with a piece called Rescue Dogs in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Not every rescue dog you can brag about rescuing something. I have a friend who just got a 3-month-old puppy. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Looks like it was sculpted by Michelangelo. I would throw my dog into the river to get this dog. And he's like, I rescued a dog. You didn't rescue, you won a dog. You rescued him. You rescued him from the Westminster Dog Show, where he was about to be murdered by gold medals. I rescued a dog. He's 4. He has a collapsing trachea, and he spends most of the day trying to lick the inside of my mouth off. I don't let him. He's a good dog. We got him from a shelter that we chose because it was the only shelter we found that didn't want to come do a home check, which is very popular and very insulting to me as a guy trying to do a good thing for an old dog. They want to come over to your house and look around and make sure your house where you live is good enough for what is currently a homeless dog.
That is Nick Turner with a piece called Rescue Dogs, taken from his Comedy Central half hour. Now on to my brief conversation with Nathan McCutcheon of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about this forthcoming Bullies and Browns event, which provides spay neuter vaccination and more for dogs fitting that description at a very low cost. And again, we're not able to say the cost, but we'll get all the other details from Nash. Presently, let's welcome Nash McCutcheon back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Nash.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me back on.
Absolutely. Always happy to have you or other colleagues from the Humane Society of Tampa Bay on the show. So let's start with the $64,000 question. What exactly is Bullies and Browns?
Well, Bullies and Browns is actually a grant that we received from PetSmart Charities to fund spay and neuter surgeries for some of the dogs here in our Tampa Bay area that seem to need it the most. Bully breeds, such as pit bulls, bulldogs, American bulldogs, Staffordshire Terriers, all of those kind of what they call bully breeds, and brown dogs. I don't know if you've ever heard the term Florida brown dog.
No.
But there's sort of a houndy terrier-looking dog that's basically just a nondescript brown dog, and they seem to be all over Florida, probably all over the United States, and we see them a lot in shelters here as well as bully breeds. So we thought we would apply for this grant that would allow us to give people the opportunity to have their bullies and browns spayed or neutered for a very, very low cost that not only includes the spay-neuter, but they'll also get their animals vaccinated.
Yeah.
Pain meds are included because they all need to go home with pain meds. E-collar is included with that because they'll, you know, charge you for that at the vet.
Sure.
So it's a really, really good deal. And as far as the qualification for the brown dogs, because a lot of people have been asking that, like, you know, my dog is mostly brown, but it doesn't look like a hound. Does it still qualify? Yes. Our goal is to get as many animals spayed and neutered as possible. So if you have a dog that's mostly brown or even, you know, has some brown patches,
we're going to take your dog.
Yeah. I doubt you'll turn people at the way and say, well, there's just not quite enough brown there.
Right.
You're close. You're in the 90 percentile of brown, but we just can't go ahead. Yeah. So, but it's interesting, too, that the grant, as far as bullies part of the phrase, that bulldogs are seems to be as critical a component as pit bulls, where I think we all that care about animals know that pit bulls are kind of their own
right.
story and their own challenge. So it's interesting that nonetheless that bulldogs sort of fit into this as well.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people, when you say bulldog, what you picture in your mind is the English bulldog, the real short one with the really jowly face. And it's the American bulldogs that actually look a lot like pit bull terriers. A lot of people mistake them for pit bull terriers. So they're taller than the English. They have a really big boxy head like your pit bulls do, and they don't have as many jowls as the English bulldog. They don't have that underbite. So a lot of people will see those dogs and just assume they're some kind of pit bull or pit bull mix. And speaking of mixes, I do want to make sure these dogs do not have to be purebred. They can be any kind of, you know, pit bull bulldog mixed with lab or shepherd or whatever. Just, you know, anything that kind of has that bully head.
Well, so then I think for people who might be out there thinking, wow, this sounds cool, and instead of more and more restrictions, there seem to be fewer and fewer. So how do I get in on it? So let's go over some of the details. So I've mentioned a few times, but it's March 6th that this is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And where and when on March 6th?
So basically, this grant is running through, we have 600 available spots, and we're running it until those spots fill up. So even if you can't get in on March 6th, what you can do is you can schedule an appointment and come in at another time to get your animal fixed. So people, if they're interested, need to contact our animal hospital, and I can give that phone number.
Please.
That's 813-870-3304. We get a high volume of calls, so if you aren't able to get through and need to leave a message, we will call you back. So go ahead and leave a message with your name and letting them know you're trying to schedule for Bullies and Browns.
Okay.
They can also email our hospital at ahc@humanesocietytampa.org. So what they need to do is just make an appointment. Appointments are required because we can only book a certain number of surgeries a day.
Right. But so it sounds like because I knew this isn't neither the first nor the last Bullies and Browns, but it sounds like even less that March 6th is the specific date. It just sounds like that's a date, but
that is one of the dates.
Yeah,
right. We do spay and neuter surgeries Monday through Friday. So March 6th. Let's see, what date is that?
Monday.
That's why it's popping up.
Okay.
Because that's the next time that we'll be doing these spay neuter surgeries.
Right. But did I follow you, or maybe I misunderstood that someone could call the number you gave or email the address you gave, make an appointment? It wouldn't necessarily be on the 6th, but if it fit the criterion for the Bullies and Browns that you've outlined, they could still.
Correct.
Okay, great. Well,
and they don't have to wait till March 6th to call. Either.
Right.
They can call today. We might have a few spots left on March 6th, or it might be a week out
that
they'd have to schedule for. But we can, until these funds are run out, we will be taking appointments. So go ahead and call.
Well, I wish you guys could be a little more flexible, Nash. It's like, well, if it's kind of brown, that'll work. It's kind of March 6th, but not necessarily. It's whenever you can get in and we can take you. And I mean,
Here's the thing. I mean, our goal is to have fewer homeless pets in the Tampa Bay area. And the proven way to do that is for people to spay and neuter their own pets. So
for sure.
If we can make that easy and accessible, that's what we're going to do.
Great.
The Bullies and Browns, there are some stipulations because it is a grant. So they do have to have some bully breed in them, and they have to have some brown in them.
Sure.
But that was really more of a marketing thing to get people interested in and to want to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You have a little brown chihuahua, bring them on.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds really good. Well, Nash, thank you so much. And again, I'll just quickly repeat the phone number to call and make an appointment, 813-870-3304. Or the email to do likewise is ahc@humanesocietytampa.org. So, Nash, thank you so much for joining us again on Talking Animals, and thanks for this great opportunity.
Thanks. It was great speaking with you.
Likewise. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour, it constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, and news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Koch. Right now, we're moving to Name That Animal Tune, where it's a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talk Animals t-shirt to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. This guy, no longer with us, but certainly celebrated in all kinds of ways, including a recent birthday, so maybe think we should get him involved with Name That Animal Tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We'll take any guesses that come in off the air, because we have just about reached the end of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Our guest next week will be Mosho, the cat rapper. That's right. Great videos, great songs. It'll be a good conversation. Stay tuned for NPR on WMNF Tampa. Thanks.